Add a berry blast off for your day with the new Berry Pebbles. A berry twist on a classic breakfast. Perfect for giving those growing minds a blast of creativity. With the new Berry Way to Pebbles. Yabba dabba do you with Berry Pebbles. Head to postpebblescereal.com to learn more. Yabba dabba do and the Flintstones and all related characters and elements, copyright and trademark Hanna-Barbera.
And good morning. It is time to get up with the NBA. Back with a pair of nail biters. LeBron and the Lakers going right to the buzzer with their rivals. We'll tell you why it was so important. And then Zion, the way they used him last night has a lot of people talking. Are they making a big mistake with this young superstar all over again? And Aaron Rodgers, upset and has every right to be. We'll explain exactly how Green Bay got it wrong and the price they will pay for their mistakes. All that and more as we get up with you on this Friday, starting right now. Mike Greenberg here in Bristol. We welcome all of you who have been watching Korean baseball. Delighted to have you for the next 2 hours, and then First Take will come your way for its entirety, starting at 11 a.m. Eastern time. And what a night it was. Back to basketball, which is brought to you by Google. And here we go. You couldn't have asked for a better show inside the bubble, and this is how it began. After a 140-day layoff, what an incredibly powerful moment we saw. As the national anthem played, every person on the court taking a knee. You see the stars. You see the coaches right before the anthem would end. LeBron James putting a fist in the air, a remarkably powerful image to begin the NBA season. And then the pregame, and LeBron with the chalk in the air, and that means he's ready. And so many other stars were there to watch, and the commissioner was in attendance. And then we had a basketball game, and it was good. Second quarter, Lakers up 9. LeBron, Kawhi, LeBron, strong to the hole, looking comfortable. Despite the slam, he had just 6 points in the first half. He would actually change shoes at halftime. Lakers by a deuce at the break. Just over 2 minutes to go in the third. Lakers down 5. Anthony Davis heating up from downtown. He would make 2 threes on the night. We'll show them both. He would actually go 16 of 17 from the free throw line. Big night AD, 34 points, 8 rebounds. Just over 4 minutes left. Clippers not going away. Kawhi Leonard working on Danny Green. Why not step back, Kawhi, and drill that? 7 of 16 from the floor. Kawhi scored 28. It's a 6-point game. Under 2 minutes to go, the Laker lead is 1. LeBron driving past to Michael Green. Yes, and it's good. Lakers back up 3. Just over 30 seconds to go. Still a 3-point game. Where are you going for a bucket? Paul George? Oh, they're all over him. Oh, he gets it to go. George, a team-high 30 points, 6 threes on the night. Under 20 seconds to go. LeBron James in a tie game. Taking it to the hole. If at first you don't succeed, try again. 6 of 19 from the floor for LeBron. 16 points, 11 rebounds, 7 assists, and that bucket putting the Lakers up 2. Under 10 seconds to go. 2-point game. You're the Clippers. Where are you going for a bucket? Who's LeBron going to guard? All right, first he's on Kawhi. Kawhi's got to give it up to Paul George, so LeBron's going to get him. LeBron plays D on both of the Clippers stars, and in the end, that's how it goes. Paul George wants a foul, not going to get one. And watch closely here as LeBron James is playing the D. First on Kawhi, then on Paul George. Look at the presence of LeBron James. Looks up briefly at the clock to see exactly how much time is remaining. And then D'ing up on Paul George, and the Lakers get the win. 103-101, what a return for the two best teams in the West.
The game of basketball has always been bigger than just the ball in the rim and 10 guys on the floor with referees. It's an opportunity to use this platform and be able to spread a lot of positive, a lot of love throughout the course of the whole world. We understand what's going on in society right now, and we're using this NBA platform as the players, as the coaches, as organizations to continue to stand strong on that. So this is a good start. This is a good start tonight. It's great to have the NBA back, and I hope our fans are proud of us tonight.
An extraordinary part of the story. And look at our coverage here. We have Tim Legler, we have Doris Burke, and assuming that signal stays up, we have Kendrick Perkins as well. And there's so many things to unpack from last night. Obviously, the demonstrations before the game and everything else. And we'll talk about that. But let's talk about the basketball, because we've waited a long time for it. And Doris, we will start with you. What was your number one takeaway from what was a very interesting first game?
Well, I thought LeBron James early in that basketball game certainly didn't get out of the gate shooting it well. And I thought he made a concerted effort to start and throughout significant stretches to involve Anthony Davis. He went back to his original sentiment. We will play through Anthony. He responded 17 trips to the free throw line. Not a good matchup for the Los Angeles Clippers. But here's the fact of the matter. LeBron James played like an MVP when it mattered most. That jump switch you just showed, he's down in a stance, he's physical, he's strong, he contends with the two elite wings from the Clippers, and then makes the game-winning basket. I mean, this guy is an MVP, historically. I think he'll finish second in the race, Greeny, much to your dismay, but he was brilliant down the stretch.
Yes, that's an argument we'll continue to have at another time. But let me come to my big fella here, Kendrick Perkins, because you talked yesterday on this show, and Stephen A. did, and Charles Barkley did, about how the Lakers are going to go as far as Anthony Davis takes them. For the first night last night, he gets to the line 17 times. He played big. What did you see from Anthony Davis, Big Perk, and what do you think it means?
Well, he was the best player on the floor last night, and it's not even a debate. The way that he closed out the third quarter, the Lakers closed out the third quarter on a 12-6 run. Anthony Davis had 10 of those points. And after that, I think the Clippers was dead bird tall grass because they lost the momentum. When you look at Anthony Davis, he's one of one. He's a generational talent. He cannot be guarded. He's the next thing since the only person I ever seen compared to him is Kevin Garnett. And with this system and this small ball, he is a problem. He's a matchup problem. He's so versatile. And on the defensive end, he switched 1-5. He guards well, and he protects the paint. So last night, on both ends of the floor, Anthony Davis was the best player on the floor last night during that game.
I agree. And Legs, to everybody's credit, like, we all know that these eight games, teams can handle them sort of any way they want to. But at least for last night, those two teams came to play, and there was great intensity on the floor. What was your biggest takeaway from this game between the Lakers and Clippers?
Well, Greeny, it was exactly that. I think LeBron James set the tone with how hard he was playing. I mean, you said it. All these teams are going to be in a different situation in terms of how they treat these eight games. For a team that's the number one seed in the West, and it's very unlikely that the Clippers are going to catch them, you would think they could come out and sort of put their toe in the water a little bit over eight games. That's not what LeBron James was about last night, and I've said repeatedly since they went down to the bubble, all of these teams, the leadership of your best players is going to determine who ends up standing at the end of this. And I thought LeBron set the tone with his sense of urgency about how important this is to him with his defensive intensity primarily. You know, there are times as LeBron has gotten deeper into his career, you know, he might take stretches of games where maybe he's not going to exert all that energy defensively on the other team's best perimeter players. That wasn't the case last night. He took on every challenge of guarding Kawhi, making sure he took away that step back going to his left, which is exactly where Kawhi was trying to get to for that shot that would have tied the game. He couldn't even get the shot off because of LeBron's defense and then jumping out on Paul George contesting him. I just thought he set the tone for his entire team that he is going to be in this from game one all the way through because he's going to try to lead this team to a title. I was impressed with his intensity.
And, Doris, I know you're going to have Houston and Dallas tonight, so you'll see another of what we consider to be the West Conference contenders. But we all have our eyes on the Lakers and the Clippers. We see the Lakers get the win. What did you take away from a Clippers standpoint last night, Doris?
Well, 58 points between Kawhi Leonard and Paul George. And it's very hard to evaluate them without two guys who I think will finish in the top three and sixth man of the year. No Montrezl Harrell, no Lou Williams. In this circumstance, Greeny, I do believe there are games where you're going to be able to have somebody who can just get you go get you buckets off the bench. So no Lou Williams. You see Patrick Beverley off the bench. Very hard to evaluate them in totality. I just think these two teams will have a seven-game series before it's all said and done.
I think that's what everybody wants to see. And instead of, they'll all be playing in the same building, just as they would have been anyway. Instead of playing them all in the Staples Center, they'll play them all in the bubble, and we'll see what happens. All right, so that was one game last night. Now we show you the other, which was also, it went right down to the final buzzer, the Pelicans and the Jazz. And again, during the anthem, both teams locking arms, taking the knee together, an extraordinary display of unity. It was reported pregame that Zion would play in short bursts, and that's what he did. Watch him here, overpowering Royce O'Neal, and one, hits the free throw. Second quarter, watch Zion, gets the defender on his hip, rolling on an alley-oop from Lonzo Ball, 6 of 8 from the floor for Zion. Pelicans up 12 at the half. Zion had 7 in that first half. Third quarter, Pelicans are up 7. Zion, they leave Malone in the corner, and he makes him pay. Coming down the baseline, Drew Holiday finds him, and now watch this pass. Look at Zion. Oh, the little left hand behind the back to Lonzo. He dishes it there. Pelicans up by 8 after 3. fourth quarter. The Pelicans' lead is 6. Remember, these games are important for New Orleans. Zion, the spin, he makes it, and it's good. Zion would score 13 in 15 minutes, but that's it. He would sit the final 7 minutes, 19 seconds, and in that time, the lead would get away entirely. We're tied. 14 seconds left. Down they go. Rudy Gobert, of all people, is going to wind up with 2 free throws to put the Jazz ahead. He'd make them both. He would score 14. So the Jazz up 2. Last chance Pelicans. Zion not on the floor. Brandon Ingram is going to take the shot, and it's not going to go. The lead gets away in its entirely. The Jazz hang on to win by a deuce.
They weren't holding me back. I did want to be out there, but you know, we're just working my way back into my flow. That's all it is. It is frustrating, but it's not so frustrating because, you know, like, I could easily, they could probably not even let me play, but you know, I'm able to play, so I'm going to do as much as I can while I'm out there.
The Pelicans were actually minus 16 with Zion on the floor, his worst career plus minus entering the day. The Pelicans were outscoring teams by over 6 points a game with him on the floor, which is easily the best mark on the team. But what we're going to come away from here, and again, Doris Brooke, I'll start with you, is going to be the minutes and the way they played him. What did you think of it last night?
Well, I said yesterday morning on a radio interview on Golic and Wingo that I did not believe that they would play him for long stretches because I think that they are taking the long view here. I know this frustrates fans. Shaquille O'Neal didn't get into the playoffs until his second year. LeBron James in his third year. And I understand in completely different circumstances, but if you're taking the long view of his career and he hasn't had that much opportunity for 5-on-5, I think I would have deployed him in exactly the same way. Now, you could make the case that distribute his minutes so that the final 7 minutes and 19 seconds when you're in a possession game, he's on the floor, but I'm going to be overly cautious with him as well.
Timmy Legs, we all just saw the Last Dance films this summer where they handled Jordan very similarly in his second year when he came back from injury. What do you think of the way the Pelicans are handling it, and what impact do you think it has on their chance of getting into the playoffs?
Well, they said, Greeny, they've short burst. I think they redefined the word short. I mean, I don't think I've ever seen a guy be put on that kind of restriction where you're talking about 3 to 4 minutes at a time for 4 different stretches. Here's what's puzzling to me. You talk about coming back from an injury. He's already come back from the injury. He did that already, so he didn't come down to Orlando hurt. He came down in the same situation as everybody else. He's a healthy player. I understand he missed some time by leaving the bubble, but for me, what I don't understand, is this really the best thing to maintain his health, to play a guy for 3 or 4 minutes, then go sit down for 15, 20 minutes of real time, do it again at the start of the second quarter, and then think about how much real time elapsed from when he left the game in the second quarter till the start of the second half, and then you put him out there for 3 minutes again. I understand if you want to play the guy 15 to 20 minutes. I just think you're better off playing him maybe 2 7-minute stretches and let him really get into a rhythm and a flow. I don't think that's the best thing for any player to be playing 3 to 4 minutes at a time and do that 4 different times. That has to be incredibly difficult on your body to get loose, get a sweat, and then go sit down as soon as you start to get into a rhythm. So I was shocked that the stretches were that short. Maybe not as much that he played 15, 20 minutes, but I thought he was going to play at least 20, and you get him out there for 6, 7 minutes at a time and let his body start to get into somewhat of a rhythm. So I was a little bit surprised by that.
Yeah, you bring up a couple of interesting points, including that all we heard during the time off here was that he was in great shape, that he'd had a chance to work out in ways that other people had not. Big Perk, if he's frustrated, and it's hard to imagine that he isn't to at least some degree, what advice would you give him? If he called you up for your sage wisdom and counsel, what advice would you give a young, frustrated player who wants to be out on the floor?
Well, just stay patient, young fella. But here's the thing, Greeny. We are overreacting. I think Zion is going to get more minutes. Just think about it. He was not supposed to play. The Pelicans didn't want him to play last night. Now, if Zion would have been in the bubble and he wouldn't have to left because of family issues, he would have played a lot of minutes because he would have been able to build up by playing in scrimmages. Remember, he missed training camp. He missed those scrimmages. So the Pelicans are taking it lightly. But I'm pretty sure when we're looking about another 3 games in, his minutes are going to be ramped up. The only reason that he played 15 minutes last night was because that he left the bubble and didn't have a training camp and those scrimmages to build up. But here's my question. When are you going to let him out the cage? When is the right time to start playing him the right amount of minutes or letting him loose? Because they need him in order to make the playoffs. He's healthy. He's 20 years old. So when is the right time? You can't low manage his minutes for the rest of his career.
Exactly. And so, Doris, very quickly, I'll leave it on that thought. Do you believe the Pelicans, and I have a suit bet with Jalen riding on this, so I admit I'm sort of, I have a vested interest in this. Do you believe the Pelicans will get into the playoffs?
Oh, boy, not if they continue to play him 15 minutes.
That's it. I mean, that's
and
it.
It's simple. Yeah.
And it's bringing me extraordinary frustration because I could win this bet with Jalen so easily if they would leave him on the floor. That obviously isn't their primary concern. Doris, we will see you on Mavericks and Rockets tonight. Guys, thank you all very much. Fascinating start to our morning. As we continue, I thought Aaron Rodgers would go on a scorched earth tour last year. Didn't really work out that way. Is he aggravated now? You'll find out next.
Delicious, meat nutritious, and the snack that packs a real protein punch. Wonderful pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Wonderful pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you're on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful pistachios a complete protein, providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snacking game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
NBA fans, listen up. You've got to try Pick 6, the newest fantasy app from DraftKings, an official partner of the NBA. Getting started is simple. Select if a player will have more or less of a stat. For example, will a player have more than 1 rebound or will a player have less than 3.5 assists? Pick your favorite players and compete for huge cash prizes. Download the new DraftKings Pick 6 app now using code Parlay and take on the competition with your best NBA player picks. Only on DraftKings Pick 6 with code Parlay. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 18 plus in most eligible states. Age varies by jurisdiction. Eligibility restrictions apply. Pick 6 not available in all states, including but not limited to Connecticut and New York. For up-to-date lists of states, visit dkng.co/pick6states. Void where prohibited. See terms at pick6.draftkings.com/promos.
Plus and the new visual album Black is King, now streaming only on Disney Plus. And by Geico, where 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance. The Phillies have canceled all activities at Citizens Bank Park, including this weekend series against the Blue Jays, after a member of their coaching staff and a member of the home clubhouse staff tested positive for COVID on Thursday. Meanwhile, Anthony Rizzo expressed his frustration after the Cubs game got postponed. He tweeted, "Players' safety? Let's sit around for 8+ hours inside the clubhouse. I'm sure I can find that somewhere in the 113-page players' safety protocol." And so for more, let's bring in our guys. Mark Teixeira is here and Robert Stanberry, only the third. Buster, so we look at what Rizzo tweets there. Is that, from the people you've been talking to, indicative of the way a lot of the players across the sport are feeling?
Increasingly, yes. What's been amazing to me this week, Greeny, is how the players are beginning to flex their muscles with this thing. We saw the Washington Nationals vote against the idea of playing in Miami this weekend. We've seen Anthony Rizzo, Joey Votto text back and forth and say, "Hey, how do you feel about playing tonight?" When you really get right down to it, you know, this is a group of super competitive people. And as this goes along, my sense is that the feeling is, look, we got to find a way to make this work. They know they're only as strong as the weakest links. This week, a lot of players critical the Marlins, like, "You guys can't figure this out." And now when they see weaknesses in the health and safety protocol, they're attacking that as well.
Fascinating. Tex, I haven't had a chance to talk to you all week, and obviously this has been a roller coaster, to say the least. What is your reaction to this and all the things we've seen with regard to it all week long?
Well, Greeny, I think this is a very easy answer. If Major League Baseball really is worried about the health and safety, and players are going to be complaining, I don't blame Anthony Rizzo, and I don't blame other players for saying that they're not safe. If that's going to be an issue and they're going to be canceling games left and right or postponing games every time there's an outbreak, they should cancel the season, because this virus is not going away. It's going to be very difficult unless you have a perfect bubble situation, which, by the way, the players turned down early in this negotiation. You're going to have outbreaks here and there. But if you want to play, if you want to get paid, if you want to try to get a season in, You're going to have to deal with these things, and it's going to have to be a partnership between the players and the owners. Major League Baseball does not want players and staff getting sick. They're not twiddling their thumbs in a back room saying, how can we get outbreaks all over the sport? They want games being played. So either cancel the season or fight through it.
Yeah, that's a, sort of the better put way I've been looking at this all week, Buster. How should we react to that? This idea that, look, it is inevitable that this virus is going to affect every team in the sport by the time we're done here, if they're going to be traveling around and living their lives like everybody else is. So if every time there is a positive test, it's going to shut something down, I can't figure out how they're going to make it all the way to the end.
Well, I can tell you this, is that over the last 3 weeks, there is growing confidence, not only among the staff, but the players, that they can plow through this, that they can work through, because they've seen the dedication among most of the players. Even among family members, the Milwaukee Brewers holding a Zoom call with all the family members saying, look, this is how we need to deal with things. And so I think the sense among a lot of players is, look, we've started this. We've sacrificed a lot. Let's do what we can to make this work, which is why when they see these holes, they absolutely want them addressed as soon as possible, especially in the aftermath of the Marlins debacle.
Now, I hear you. Let me very quickly, because it's a lot more fun conversation. Our Jeff Passan reported yesterday, baseball and the union have agreed to seven-inning doubleheaders. Buster, your reaction?
Look, in recent years, the Player Association hasn't been open to a lot of new ideas when it comes to on-field stuff. In this case, they actually brought this idea to Major League Baseball in large part because of concern about pitchers. We're seeing pitchers drop left and right, elbow injuries all over the place. It's pretty clear that the erratic training of 2020 seems to be affecting a lot of teams, maybe not the Cleveland Indians, but a whole lot of pitchers. And so I think the idea is, look, if we're going to play doubleheaders, let's reduce the amount of stress on the pitchers, cut it from 18 innings to 14 innings.
Tex, what do you think?
I really like it. Listen, all the rules are out the window this year, and I think what we're seeing is the regular season is going to be kind of like an exhibition. A lot of teams aren't going to play their full schedule, but the best eight teams in each league will still most likely make the playoffs. The real season starts in October, and if you can get more games in, if you can reduce injuries, like Buster says, by playing seven-inning doubleheaders, I'm all for it, because the record books are out the window. All of the normal old-school baseball rules are out the window. So let's keep the players safe. Let's play as many games as possible. And if you have to postpone a game because of a little bit of an outbreak, you know, play two later in the season and play seven-inning doubleheaders.
I'm totally with you. And you know what? At the end of the day, if we're going to play a seven-inning game and put a runner on second to start the eighth if the game is tied, I never would have thought we'd get here, but I'm all for it. That's Buster Olney and Mark Teixeira at a crazy time in baseball. Guys, thanks. In the meantime, we have more games for you coming up here. The Rangers and Giants start a three-game series tonight at Oracle Park. You'll see it 9 Eastern on ESPN2 and on the ESPN app. As we continue, LeBron was great when the Lakers needed it. Anthony Davis was great the whole night. Why last night's Laker win should scare the rest of the NBA. With that thought in mind, a little sneaky Hembo action. LeBron and the Lakers won their 50th game of the season last night. Raises the question, which player played on the most 50-win teams in NBA history? That's the question, and the answer is next. You're watching Get Up on ESPN. We are back on Get Up, and this one's almost unfair to Jay Will. We didn't give him any time to think about it, but here's the question. Jay, LeBron James and the Lakers won their 50th game of the season last night. Which player in NBA history played on the most 50-win teams?
Bill Russell?
It's a good guess. They play. It isn't Bill Russell. The answer is Tim Duncan. Tim Duncan, 18 50-win seasons. If we'd given, that one was borderline unfair. We didn't give Jay the question ahead of time.
You guys set me up for failure.
I know.
Yeah, what's going on here, Greeny? What's up with that?
I feel like that wasn't fair. Hembo says no excuses. You know what? I'm actually taking Jay's side on this. Meanwhile, let's go to the action last night. If you're just joining us, let me show you the final moments. Fourth quarter, Lakers, Clippers, picking it up with just over 30 seconds left. Lakers up 3. Paul George will not be denied. They're all over him. The double team, doesn't matter. Paul George knocks down a 3, ties the ball game. He had a team high 30 points and 6 threes under 20 seconds to go. LeBron James didn't have a huge offensive night, but that putback bucket gives gives the Lakers the late lead. He had 16 points, 11 rebounds, 7 assists. Under 10 seconds to go, Clippers down by that deuce, and watch the defense that LeBron James plays. First, he's got Kawhi Leonard. Kawhi's got to give it up. Who's he going to give it to? Paul George. Oh, here comes LeBron. LeBron comes out on George. George looking for a foul, not going to get it. LeBron James playing great defense down the stretch. And again, I just want you to notice this, because LeBron has the presence of mind as he switches off here, going at George. Watch this millisecond. He looks up at the clock to see just how much time is left. Remarkable presence on the floor. And in the end, the Lakers get a hard-earned, very interesting two-point win in their return to the floor against their arch rival. And look who's here. Here's Jay Will and Kendrick Perkins, the two of you guys. And so, Jay, as you join us here, it was a very interesting night. Anthony Davis led the way on one side. George and Kawhi did their thing on the other. LeBron has the big bucket at the end. What was your number one takeaway from Lakers-Clippers last night?
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use the code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only, not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use the code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Let's pump the brakes, Greeny. The Clippers are the best team in basketball. And I know the Lakers won last night. The Lakers were able to do that with AD going off. LeBron James had a decent, somewhat game. But you think about this Clipper team, the fact that this was a duo versus a duo last night. This was Anthony Davis, LeBron James versus Paul George and Kawhi. Well, guess what? The Clippers aren't just a duo. They were missing Lou Williams and Montrezl Harrell, two guys that come off the bench that actually average 18 points per game, combined for 36 points per game. When they are at full strength, the Clippers not only have the best defensive versatility in the league, yes, the Lakers have a height advantage, but the three-point shooting of the Clippers with Lou Will and Trez on the floor, the Clippers are the best team in basketball. It took that amount of effort for the Lakers to beat a Clipper team that wasn't fully loaded last night. It's going to be interesting to see how things play out, but the Clippers are the best team in basketball.
Big Perk, is he right? There isn't any question the Clippers were playing without two important pieces. Is he right? With those two guys, the Clippers are the best team.
Come on, Perk. Come on, Perk. Talk to me.
No, they're not. And guess what? Guess what? The Lakers are begging for Lou Will to come back. And you know what? LeBron didn't play. He played awful offensively in his eyes. That's not a good game for LeBron James, or not even a decent game. But guess what? He would have had a great game if Lou Will would have played, because they would have involved him in every pick and roll and would have got the switch and would have made Lou Will guard. By the way, Jay Will, let me talk about the impact that LeBron James had on this game last night. We talk about what he did down the stretch for us, locking up guys and hitting the game winner, the go-ahead bucket. But he locked up Paul George and Kawhi Leonard every single time he guarded them. And by the way, let's talk about an unsung hero that no one is talking about, that has 16 points quietly on 8 field goal attempts. He was 6 for 8 from the field. Kyle Kuzma. By the way, I'm lobbying for Deion Waiters to get more minutes. He looked phenomenal. I think with him and LeBron on the court at the same time, it's going to be great. And wait, I don't care if Lou Will and Montrezl Harrell come back. I don't care if they come back. They do not have an
answer for
Anthony Davis.
Perk.
Period, point blank.
Perk, wait a second. Maybe LeBron James didn't have his best game due to the defense that the Clippers were playing. You act like the Clippers had nothing to do with LeBron James having a subpar game. And I hear what you're saying about Lou Will, but at the end of a game, it's just not going to be Paul George and Kawhi Leonard as the only two offensive options on the floor. You put Lou Williams on the floor. You put Montrezl Harrell on the floor. These are different options. These guys don't need to do it all by themselves. They're the most offensive-loaded team there is in the league,
guess Perk. What?
Kendrick Perkins, you are very good at the nonverbal communication, I must say. And I just want to very quickly throw into this conversation before we get to the next game that a lot of people are suggesting that they really like the two of you together. We're trying to come up with a theme for the segments. And we have Perk, do you have any idea for what we could call
Perk.
The two of
Don't
you guys
together?
Don't
say it together? Out loud, Perk.
TV, Perk. I got one. The Rock and Kevin Hart. I'm The Rock and Jay Willis, Kevin Hart.
Messed up.
That's it right there, Greeny.
I'm not even that small, Greeny. I'm 6'2 and a half. I'm not even that small, Greeny. He's going to put me in the same box with Kevin Hart. That's messed up.
Hey, Greeny.
Little people jokes. Okay, I got you, Perk.
Hey, Greeny.
All right.
Hey, Greeny. I bet you Jay Will's standing up right now.
Okay, let's get to Zion. Zion Williamson was active last night, but only played in short bursts in the Pelicans' first game of the restart. He scored 13 points on 6 of 8 in 15 minutes of action, but he sat out the final 7 minutes and change of the fourth quarter. Pelicans lost a big lead and lost the game by 2. And remember, they're desperate to win every game the rest of the way if they're going to try and get themselves into these playoffs. The good news for Zion, it was his 5th game this year, shooting at least 75% from the field. The bad, he had more turnovers than he had combined in rebounds, assists, steals, and blocks. It was his first career game with fewer than 3 rebounds. So, Jay Will, I come to you again. You've been following Zion as closely as literally anybody, going back to his days at Duke. What did you think of the way they used him in those bursts last night?
Oh, Greeny, thank you so much for asking me this question. We were on your show, this is a couple of weeks ago, and Big Perk and I got in an argument. He's like, I'm telling you right now, Alvin Gentry, they're going to let Zion go. Let him go. Let him play all day long. They pushed him for a playoff spot. I sat there, I listened to Perk puff his chest. I stayed cool, calm, and collected. And I said, you know what, Perk? They're going to have him on a minutes restriction. You may not like it, but I'm just trying to tell you right now, especially after he went away home for a couple days with a family emergency. And last night was a prime example of that. Look, I thought he should have played down the stretch. The Pelicans have this habit of giving away close games. They've been doing it throughout the course of the season. This ultimately, I think, hurts the Pelicans, but not having Zion on the court at the end, I knew it was going to happen because that's how you're going to play him. It's the long-term game, not the short-term gratification for Zion, even though I thought he should have played down the stretch last night. 15 minutes, he needs way more than 15 minutes.
Perk?
Listen, Greeny, I can't believe Jay Will for saying this, right? He's trying to call me out and trying to prove me wrong for something I said, right? But if Zion Williamson would have played in training camp and would have played through the scrimmages, we would be talking about a whole different type of situation right now. He went home. The Pelicans did not want him to play last night. They said, okay, if you're going to play, Zion, since you want to play, we're just going to play you 15 minutes. I guarantee you, Mr. Jason Williams, that if Zion, when it comes to 3 games in, he'll be playing about 30. He just wasn't supposed to play yesterday due to that he had to leave the bubble and that he didn't have any practice time. So for you to sit up here and try to say that, oh, I told you so, Perk, and you knew this man had to leave the bubble, that's crazy to me, Jay Will.
Come on, Perk. I wish a lot of things would have happened in life. I wish I would have never got hurt. I wish I would have won 9 championships. There's a lot of things, but the fact is, things happen the way they happen. Minutes restriction, my brother. That's what you saw last night.
Is that going to continue? Real quick, let me ask Jay.
Let me ask Jay.
Is that going to continue? Do you expect them to be this kind of careful with him the rest of this restart?
No.
So you agree with Perk? He's going to start playing.
Yes. I think he'll start playing. But I think last night, once again, easing him in to what this new normal is and allowing him in his conditioning to get back up to a point, considering he's had time off.
But real quick, they don't have a lot of time for that, Perk. Will he be able to get them in the playoffs? Will they make the playoffs this year based on the way they're using him?
No, they won't. If they don't play him minutes, the Pelicans will not make the playoffs.
Right.
Although I love Brandon Ingram and the way that J.J. Redick playing, but if Zion is not on the court and not playing a lot of minutes for the Pelicans, they have no shot.
They have a very bright future, no question, but that might not be over the next few weeks. All right. They are the Rock and Kevin Hart whenever we need them here on
Come on, Greeny. Don't start labeling me that.
I got to run. Thank you both. We had a great weekend. We'll check in with you Monday. To the NFL we go, where our Jeremy Fowler polled NFL executives throughout the league on which players were the top 10 at each position around the sport. And we found the case of the Green Bay Packers to be very interesting. NFL execs are taking Aaron Rodgers as the number 3 quarterback. That shouldn't be a surprise. His numbers last year, by his standards, not eye-popping, but he did lead them to 13 wins. Then Devontae Adams ranks as the 7th best wide receiver. One executive even ranked him first. He has a league-leading 40 touchdown catches over the last 4 seasons. David Bakhtiari was ranked as the 7th best offensive tackle. He was a Pro Bowler this past year. And then here's Kenny Clark, who was also a Pro Bowler this past season, ranks as the 10th best inside defensive lineman. And that's it. The Packers only have 4 guys on this whole list. 9 teams have more top 10 players than Green Bay does. You see the Saints leading the way. And so it begs the interesting question that I feel like I've been asking for a while. Have they put enough good players around Aaron Rodgers for him to make a championship kind of run at this stage of his career, especially when they draft a quarterback in the first round? Ryan Clark and Jeff Darlington are up early with us this morning. And RC, that's the question to you. I know your feelings about Aaron Rodgers after he beat you in the Super Bowl that time. Do they have they done a good enough job putting the pieces around him at this stage of his career to get another one of those rings?
Absolutely not. And for him to be upset and say he needed 4 fingers of tequila after the draft pick was made of Jordan Love, I get it. And it's not about drafting a quarterback. It's about getting Aaron Rodgers help. If you look at this team, this defense started out playing really well last year. The Smiths rushed the passer very well. The secondary was extremely good. But they couldn't make plays on the outside unless it was Devontae Adams. And that is something that I expect to continue. The other thing you have to pay attention to is that Matt LaFleur wasn't creative as an offensive mind or as a play caller. He wasn't getting the Green Bay Packers into situations that made easy throws, easy completions, and easy big plays, which he was supposed to do in coming over from Mike McCarthy. And so this team doesn't even win the NFC North to me. They are behind the Minnesota Vikings. I think they're a better team. I think they're more talented. And even though I'd always take Aaron Rodgers over Kirk Cousins, even when Aaron Rodgers decides to retire, because he's one of the best I have ever seen, number 2 behind Patrick Mahomes, the Minnesota Vikings will represent the NFC North in the playoffs.
What do you think, Jeff?
I don't know, but I just look at, what they did last year. I thought they were a really effective team, and doing so without the weapons that Aaron Rodgers really needed. Now, the question is, Jimmy Graham's gone, Geronimo Allison is gone. Who really is there to help Rodgers in the passing game? No, they have not done enough to help Aaron Rodgers, nor has he gotten the help throughout his career. Literally, Jordan Love is the first skills position player drafted in the first round since Aaron Rodgers. I mean, that's crazy to me. That being said, they're putting so much pressure on Rodgers to do it. He feels like one of the few guys that are capable of it in year 2 of Matt LaFleur's system. I generally, though, disagree with Ryan. I think that this team was so effective last year with what they had that they'll make a jump this year and be a better squad. And if they're a better squad, then they project themselves to go potentially even
Jeffrey,
to the NFC Championship
Jeffrey.
Game.
Jeffrey, so they're going to win 16 games? I mean, they won 13, so how many games are you expecting
That's
them
insane.
To win? Like, how? What kind of jump they going to make? What kind of
it's
jump they going to make?
Bro, win total.
Go ahead, Ryan.
Right, but when you watch a team travel to California 3 times last year and get slaughtered, they didn't just get beat. When they couldn't get stops defensively, right, which they started to down the end of the stretch of the season, give up big play after big play. You look at 300 rushing yards in the NFC Championship. They have no offensive answers. And so if this team isn't stout each and every day, no matter how great Aaron Rodgers is, they don't make a late playoff push. And that's what you need to do when you have one of the best in the world pulling the trigger for you.
Final word, Jeff.
Look, they don't have to improve in win totals. They just have to get better as a team. So when they get to the playoffs, they're more prepared for those games and then they can advance further. I just think they got to get to the dance and then show what kind of team they are? That, to me, is a major question.
We'll see. And then, obviously, how all of this, if it does at all, impact Aaron Rodgers psychologically based upon the way the franchise is deciding to make its moves. Guys, sit tight, because I have another thing I want to bring up with you coming up next, and it involves Dak and the Cowboys. They did not get a long-term deal done, as you well know. Now the team has made some comments this morning suggesting they're not totally to blame for that. You will hear it and you'll make up your own mind as we continue in a moment. Where are they going in Big D? The answer is next. Get Up on ESPN. We're back on Get Up, and Cowboys Executive Vice President Stephen Jones says he remains confident the franchise can complete a long-term deal with quarterback Dak Prescott. He spoke to the Cowboys website yesterday and revealed that Prescott would like a shorter contract. The team wants a longer one, but he still believes a deal can eventually be made. Here's what Stephen Jones said. They certainly want a shorter deal. Historically, we have, as management, wanted longer deals because it's more cap-friendly, and we're able to spread things out and keep some players. At the end of the day, and Dak understands this, that's what we're trying to do. So nothing really revelatory there, Jeff Darlington, our insider, right? I mean, we've known all along that that was the hang-up. But if they weren't able to overcome it in time to beat the franchise tag deadline this year, how does it get resolved going forward?
It's not easy. And I think to that point, what we have to remember, we don't know the exact numbers of what Dak really wanted for his 4 years as opposed to what the Cowboys wanted to give him for 5 years. But teams need to understand that if they want that flexibility, if they want the ability to manage the salary cap through their quarterback's annual salary, there's a price to be paid for that. And I think that that's ultimately what Dak Prescott's side is saying. Look, you guys want to give us 5 years, you want to extend us past where we want to go, then show us the money for it. And then you'll have the flexibility you need. To your point, though, Greeny, it's only going to get more difficult. The better Dak Prescott potentially plays, the more his price goes up, the bigger the difference becomes. That's why I am not convinced that just because Stephen Jones says they'd like to sign him next offseason, that we will be in any different place then than we are right now.
Yes, with what his tag value would be next year and then the possibility of becoming unrestricted free agent, his leverage is almost endless. So, Ryan Clark, how does this play out? You've got the crystal ball. How is this all going to work out?
Listen, I believe that Dak Prescott doesn't play for the Cowboys after next year. I think that he will sign the franchise tag if he's offered, but if they still want to do a long-term deal and they aren't willing to budge a little bit on the money annually, I don't believe that Dak Prescott needs to take that short. From the beginning of this, Kirk Cousins spoke out and said, I talked to Dak, and the franchise tag is not a bad thing if you use it the right way. Dak Prescott has all the leverage. I mean, he isn't a guy who had made a ton of money up to this point. And you think in 2 years, he can make $68 million guaranteed and then step out and get a long-term deal? I think Dak Prescott has all the leverage right now. He is in the driver's seat. He's going to make a ton of money with the opportunity to make more if Stephen Jones and Jerry Jones don't want to play a little ball with him to get that longer-term deal done.
And look, as much as be trying to put the personal side of it aside, we all know, RC, that can be very difficult to do. Yes, I mean, if they come to him after this year and say, look, we needed to see it one more season, whatever it is that they say, and now they try and get a deal done, hard feelings sometimes become a factor in this stuff. Would you be worried about that, Ryan Clark?
You know what? I wouldn't. It doesn't seem like Dak is a guy who harbors those feelings. It seems like Dak Prescott is a guy who also understands what being the quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys means. And, you know, I know Stephen Jones and Jerry Jones have tried to play that. Well, think about how much money you'll make off the field. You just want to make more money. He wants his contract to be based on what he feels like he is worth as far as a football player. And he also wants to be the Dallas Cowboy quarterback. And so I believe Dak understands that. I believe Dak understands business. But he is hurt. And you can tell by his brother's tweet right after he wasn't signed. He said, I don't know how much longer I will be cheering for the Dallas Cowboys. So it's going to have to be something that makes Dak happy, that makes him whole. But he has to understand the money and also the value of being the quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys.
Yeah, and I think sometimes they're counting on that in Dallas, and he's basically saying, I'm not interested in that part of the conversation. Jeff, final word. What is your expectation for how this thing goes?
I think if you're Dak Prescott, you sit there and say, I can have my cake and eat it too. I can get paid like a franchise quarterback and do it in Dallas. The question is, Do the Dallas Cowboys agree? Just don't know yet.
Much more on this as we go. Guys, sit tight. We have a lot more football coming up, but we'll get to basketball at the top of the next hour. LeBron James had the ball at the end for the Lakers. Zion was on the bench. A great comeback by the NBA, marred by interesting decisions. Oh, what a night. We're all over it next. Get Up on ESPN.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.